Alrighty, welcome back to Two Guys Watch a Game from not even a year ago, really, at this point, because it's summer and we need content.
That's a very good way to put it.
Yeah, my name is Brendan Farrell. I'm joined by James Murphy. James, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Quite a bit of film from this past year to go back on, and this one especially had quite a bit of, let's just say, everything, and can't wait to get into it.
Yeah, so on today's episode, we are going to talk about just going back and rewatching Ole Miss's win over Texas A&M. Another game I was at, by the way. But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at bferrell77. You can follow James on Twitter at jsmurphymedia. So, yeah. So I was at this game. James, I'm assuming you were watching this from home, I think?
I don't know if I quite got the chance. I was able to watch a little bit of the highlights, but I don't know if I saw it live.
Gotcha. Yeah. So what'd you think?
So you're familiar with Murphy's Law. I certainly am. Yes. But this is kind of a variation of it where instead of anything that can go wrong will go wrong, this game is more like anything that can happen will happen, for better and worse. Block field goal return for a touchdown to get the opposition back into it, sure. Receiver going to the sideline and really, really bending an NCAA rule, why not? One-handed catch by Trey Harris that would make Odell Beckham Jr. jealous? Sure thing. And lastly, another blocked field goal, this time to win it for Ole Miss? Cherry on top. And obviously, it's very entertaining. And this is, we talked about, because last week, the game we talked about was the LSU game, and it being the Trey Harris game, well, I present to you the real Trey Harris game. 11 receptions, 213 yards, a touchdown, plus the one-handed grab and a two-point conversion where he, as you put it very well in your piece, was socially distanced from the rest of the Texas A&M defense that had done pretty well up to that point, with the exception of the Miami game. But for them to have been able to win that game was really cool and was really spoke to what kind of team they were. And I think a lot of people would say what they would become in how they really just were able to bounce back, because they were not really comfortable a lot of that game. They had to fight back. They had to hold off rallies. They had to make a little bit of a rally at their own there. They had to be, as you said in your piece, be very creative. And, you know, it spoke a lot to them. And it was maybe second to the LSU game. I think you could argue probably their second biggest win of the season.
Yeah, just kind of a sort of just all-around nuts game, no pun intended, because this game did indeed feature a guy punching another guy in the area down under.
I must have missed that.
Yeah, no, there was an ejection, like, third quarter, I want to say, maybe. That happened, and then also that one-handed catch from Trey Harris was not the only one-handed catch. It was not even the only one-handed Trey Harris catch. Granted, the second one didn't count, but it was still really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think one of the reasons why, you know, sort of we wanted to talk about this game was obviously, like, the field goal block at the end is probably one of the signature moments from last year, as you know. But also, I feel like this is kind of the game where, you know, the LSU win is the signature one, right?
Right.
At least at the time it was. And the bowl game was a fun way to cap things off. But I feel like this is the one that sort of made sure everything was still possible.
Yeah, it kind of put them in position to, at the time, still make a run to possibly get to Atlanta for the SEC championship. I think with Georgia the week after, there was a lot of talk about this being a trap game, because the week before you go to what was at then the number one team in the country, you host an Aggies team that we knew then and we know even more now was very, very desperate that day, and they almost got what they wanted. So it took a lot of fending off, especially with even blocked field goal aside, because Texas A&M's offense really did get going and the defense was able to make enough late to make it a close game. But even then, Ole Miss able to do what they were able to do.
Well, I think the thing with A&M is that they were always sort of a, I don't know if trap game is the, maybe it is, but they were sort of always, you know, a team that you thought could beat somebody, right? Because, I mean, they entered the year last year fourth in 24/7's team talent composite. Granted, the development side wasn't always there.
That's putting it lightly.
But they always, I mean, they had the dudes to pull it off, right? And so I think that's what always made people at least a little bit nervous, I guess, concerned.
Yeah, I think those are fair words.
A&M was always on the radar.
Yeah, it was not something you could overlook because you knew that, again, development aside and scheming aside and inconsistency aside and, well, drama aside, you knew that they definitely could do what, you know, that a lot of people thought they would be able to do.
Yeah, okay, so some notes that I thought were interesting. Because I recently picked up a PFF subscription and wanted to show it off, I suppose. Any guesses on who the highest graded Ole Miss player was in this game?
Overall.
Yeah. At least offense, because I, you know.
See, I feel like the obvious answer, kind of like the dangling carrot, would be Trey Harris, but I feel like it's not Trey Harris, so I am going to think outside the box and say Quinshon Judkins.
You are thinking way too hard about this.
Per usual.
Yes. Yes, you should have. This is the classic taking an exam and being down to a 50-50 and then second-guessing yourself and getting it wrong. So congratulations. It was indeed Trey Harris. So he's at like a 90.9. Jackson Dart was not far behind him. But the reason why I bring this up is any guesses on who the highest graded defensive player for Texas A&M was?
Defensive for Texas A&M, if we're just going off the box score and looking at some of the stats available, was it the guy who blocked the field goal?
It was Walter Nolan.
Hmm.
83.7.
He liked the way that he was playing in Vaught-Hemingway and said, you know what? I want to be playing more games there.
Granted, only 36 snaps because I think he came off the field injured at some point. He was, I just wanted to bring that up because, you know, obvious reasons with him transferring to Ole Miss.
Right, just kind of like odd irony, funny irony looking back on it.
Yeah, so anyway, if you feel like looking back at a game where Walter Nolan played well and Ole Miss still won, you might want to check the film on this one out. But anyway, yeah, I don't know, what were some big notes for you on this game?
Well, as I said, kind of anything that could have happened had happened. Let's see. I think you brought up a lot of great points in the piece you wrote about this. The offensive creativity was really there. And I think that with the Georgia game coming up and with as big of games going ahead in the season as there were, it was kind of on Ole Miss to really demonstrate a little bit more offensive creativity so that when those games arrived, they'd be able to hang around. Now, they hung around with Georgia for a little bit, and then Georgia did what Georgia's been doing to almost everybody. But even then, they were able to show a lot of the kind of offensive creativity that people wondered if they had consistently. The LSU game proved a lot of that, but for them to have been able to do it against Texas A&M, just really impressive thing. It was, you know, I think it was Jackson Dart who talked about how they really made a statement with a lot of what they were doing, and it also, like the LSU game, demonstrated a lot of the sideline confidence that they had. I think he was talking about moments where it's like, we knew we were going to score late with that last, what ended up being the game when he touched down to Judkins, and it really just demonstrated what this team was capable of and how they'd continue to grow.
What did you think of the intent to deceive stuff?
It's definitely bent the rules. Now, as the guy who was in the press box for it, you could tell me a lot more about it than I could. But from what I did see from it, I don't know if he, I think it was just one of those things where he broke the huddle and did go out to try and line up as opposed to going to the sideline. Now, I don't know if you can't see from the first shot of the broadcast, but it did. I can see why people thought it would bend the rules because he was so far out and so wide open that you almost wonder. It's like there's no way there wasn't some kind of trickery with it. But I do think it was just a matter of they lined up the way they usually lined up and one guy was wide open and they took advantage.
Yeah, I don't really claim to be an expert on the football rule book, but I'm like pretty certain that that play is not legal. It is really funny, though, that, like, even when they show the, like, all 22, like, alternate angle, you still can't see him. Like, he's so, like the angle has to, like, the camera has to zoom out because, and it zooms out, like, right as the pass is being thrown. But you can sort of assume about where he was. I mean, he's, like, outside the numbers.
Right, he's not even a foot, he's not even a foot away from the sideline.
Like, you can go back and check like the original broadcast angle. You can count all 11 Aggies and you can count 10 Ole Miss players.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just nobody out there. It's really fascinating. Also, James, I think chaos just finds me.
Yeah, it would seem so because you had this, you had Texas A&M both in the Grove. It does find you, and you know, this raid next year is going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, just ask Brad what happens when the two of us get together and there's just too much chaotic energy in the air.
Yeah. Happens a lot with high school sports if you follow him closely enough on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I just want to throw this out there. Gosh, I felt like there were so many flags in this game.
Yeah, that seems par for the course.
You could have done a drinking game just for the holding penalties in this game.
Yeah, kind of one of those games where you wonder if yellow is just a part of the team's uniforms or if, the flags are just getting about as much airtime as the deep balls.
So, yeah, I mean, like, the reason why I bring it up is that Ole Miss was actually one of the most penalized teams in the country last year, which is not great. They were 104th, or tied for 104th, I should say, with 59.1 yards per game. And the reason why that was so important in this game was that, a bunch of penalties backed them up in the red zone to the point where it was like a third and 30, I think.
Right. That was on what would have put them up 7-20 or 20-7 one point in the game.
I think so.
That was the holding. Yes. One of them was a holding penalty. I saw that.
No, actually, no. This is when they were up 14-0.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, they were up 14-0 and it backs them up, which then sets up a blocked field goal that gets returned for a touchdown, right? Uh-huh. We could be talking about a totally different game if the penalties don't happen.
Right. Am I looking at this right? 17 penalties for 134 yards combined?
Something like that. Yeah, you see 134?
Yes.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there were a lot of penalties in this game, but I think somehow fewer than the LSU game. But yeah, no, and then this is, you know, look, you live by the blocked field goal, you die by the blocked field goal, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, definitely, especially in Oxford.
I don't know if you had this impression, but I don't know if it was just because at the time, I remember I was nursing a head cold, and I was tired from the, this was an 11 a.m. kick the Saturday morning after covering high school football, which is not ideal.
It is not. Well, I don't know if I can attest to this directly because all of my games were at night, but I do get where he's coming from.
You can imagine.
I can, yes.
Yes. So I was already sick and tired. But I just remember a feeling of never really feeling like this game was in danger.
Even when Ole Miss went down late.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It was strange. It never really, I do remember thinking like, oh, they are losing, this feels not right, like not in a like fan way, but in a like, this does not feel like it is reflective of the actual play on the field.
Yeah, just like from an objective standpoint where you look at it and you just kind of look at the score and you don't think it matches what you've seen up to that point.
Yes, precisely. I don't know. It was very strange, and I do remember feeling like when they got the ball toward the end of regulation that, like, I don't really think there was a whole lot of doubt that they were going to score on that drive.
Yeah, especially with the way things had gone up to that point. And I think I was pretty impressed with, I think it was a third down and four in A&M territory, and Dart scrambled and was looking for a pass, and he just ends up finding Judkins for what ends up getting them to the first and goal, which led to the Judkins touchdown later on. You know, when people talk about Jackson Dart being one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC, and some would say the country, you know, I do think it's plays like that that would support, that they would go to as a way to support their case, because, you know, obviously the great quarterbacks can make big plays when they have to, but they also take what the defense gives them, especially in times like that. And I was really impressed with that and the ability to just keep the drive going on his part.
So here's your fun fact for you about Jackson Dart. I did a whole little mini Twitter thread yesterday about, you know, sort of Ole Miss's struggles in pass protection last year, and the effects of, you know, pressure on quarterbacks and on Dart specifically. Did you know that the only quarterback with a better running grade under pressure last season was Jaden Daniels?
Really?
That was it.
And now they're giving him, let's just say, quite a bit more protection on paper this coming season.
That's what the hope is, but we will see about that. But I just thought that was interesting because, I mean, Jackson Dart's athletic, but he's not Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive company to be in, to put it lightly.
And I don't want to do the white quarterback has sneaky athleticism thing, but I just thought it was funny.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, yeah, no, that was also the pass that he takes, like, a pretty big shot on, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he took some shots in this game. It's weird. I think he only had, like, the one sack, but he took some big-time hits in this game.
Yeah, and from, you know, as we've said, a Texas A&M defense that, you know, has the dudes to not only make plays, but put the hurt on you.
But, yeah, also Dart's 94.8 QBR, again, not passer rating, QBR, mm-hmm. 1 to 100. Mm-hmm. Was his best of the season, not counting the Mercer game, I believe, which, yeah, that's, like, fair.
So the best one against an FBS opponent.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, you know, against a pretty solid defense in Texas A&M, too. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know, there were just a whole bunch of, like, weird things. Gotta love a J.J. Piggies short yardage situation carry. Gotta love that. You know, Texas A&M sideline, getting a sideline violation.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I think one of their coaches was on the field. You know, the weird substitution touchdown. Yeah, it's just very, very strange. Also, you know what else is strange? Like, Ole Miss just, like, forgetting how to play defense in the second half of this game.
Well, they had – I did mention how after the LSU game, despite them winning, there were a lot of questions about Pete Golding. And after that, they did make some strides, but that doesn't mean they didn't have their hiccups. And granted, I do think that blocked field goal not only – I think that blocked field goal definitely swayed the momentum in Texas A&M's favor, and I think that had a lot to do with it, but – you know, that road to improvement was not without its hiccups/bumps in the road, and this was definitely one of them.
It's weird because, like, look, Ole Miss is never going to dominate time of possession. That's just not how they play football.
Right.
But it is funny that, like, the second half, Texas A&M had the ball for 20 minutes and 28 seconds compared to Ole Miss's 9 minutes and 32 seconds.
Wow. That's more than twice as much.
Yeah, no, they allowed 134 yards in the first half and then allowed 323 in the second half.
That's pretty incredible. And Ole Miss only scored three fewer points.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Ole Miss had the advantage in average yards per play, and it was really evident in the first half, and they still ended up on the better side of things. Ole Miss averaged 7.8 yards per play compared to Texas A&M's 5.9 over the course of the game.
So what you're saying is this is an example of quality over quantity?
What I'm saying is, yeah, I guess. Sure, we'll roll with that. But it is just kind of interesting that, like, you do look at, like, okay, well, they did outgain them 323 to 219 in the second half, A&M over Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, the scores were pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, Max Johnson threw for 228 yards in the second half alone.
One of those things again where, yep, checks out.
I just, you know, anytime I see the name Max Johnson, I, like, my heart skips a beat because, Max Johnson was the quarterback for LSU in the legendary cleat yeet game.
Oh, you mean Marco Wilson just chucking the cleat out of Ben Hill Griffin?
Yep. And, you know, I understand that he was that Max Johnson was a young quarterback at the time, but it still makes me feel weird because you know, last year I sort of had the mindset of, if I remember you from the pandemic season, you've been in college for too long.
No, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
But I think he was just using up his, like, fourth year or whatever. So it was, like, fine. It wasn't, like, you know, one of these COVID medical redshirt eighth, ninth year guys or seventh year or whatever. He was just, you know.
Right. He was just there on his standard fourth.
Yeah, no. But I just, you know, just saw Max Johnson and I was like, all right, here we go.
Right, yeah, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, he's not a direct reason for that bad memory, but because he's associated with it, you get the heebie-jeebies.
But, yeah, I don't know. It was just kind of a weird game, but I never really felt, like, all that concerned. I don't know. What else did you think?
Well, kind of going off of that, it felt as if Ole Miss wasn't that concerned either. I mean, there was obviously a sense of urgency late, but not necessarily a sense of being scared, not necessarily a sense of fear. Definitely kind of like a focused confidence towards the end, which, again, demonstrated how far they came from the season before and earlier in that season.
Granted, it's a lot easier to... I'm assuming you're making that based off the quotes you've seen post-game from that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a lot easier to do that when you've won.
Also true. Also, I can't argue that.
But yeah, so I think, you know, you also had another good Lane Kiffin moment in this game where after the weird substitution touchdown, he does like a quick, like, caught you sleeping thing.
Oh, yeah, a little bit of... Does he do the handshake with the lineman before or after that?
Oh, I forget.
Either way, whichever order it was a pretty cool sequence.
But yeah, you know, gotta love those Lane Kiffin celebrations, right?
Oh yeah, we're in for a lot more in 2024.
But yeah, I don't know, any other big, like, standouts for you in this one?
I mean, that was all the big stuff. Got a little bit of everything in this one.
Yeah, so I don't know. Do you think... I don't know, I just think it was interesting, the timing of this game, too, because they were playing a really good defense at Texas A&M, right? And they had Georgia the next week. And it gave you just a little bit of hope to be like, well, they did it against a pretty good Texas A&M defense. Maybe they got a shot. And they did not.
Right. Well, Georgia's one of those teams where not only do you have to play a perfect game, but you also need a few breaks. And I would say... slight tangent, because I know we're talking about the A&M game, but they were doing all right in the Georgia game until I think it was the failed fourth down conversion, and that was the one imperfection that Georgia just kind of took advantage of and where they kind of ran away with the rest of that game.
I think one of the other things I want to point out was it just seemed there was like a stretch in SEC play where they just managed to find enough plays at the right time to pull some games out. You know, like, they had a run of three straight games decided by 7 points with, or fewer, with LSU and then Arkansas.
And then Auburn.
And then Auburn.
And then this game, right?
Vanderbilt and then this game.
So 4 out of 5 decided by one possession.
Yeah.
We went to a handful of those games, obviously, Brendan, LSU, Texas A&M. I was at Arkansas and at Auburn. I could tell you that was a pretty intriguing stretch of football.
Yeah, I mean, and is that what you remember, too, is just them being able to come up with some right plays at the right time?
Yeah, definitely a lot of that, and also just a lot of resolve and a lot of just being able to stay calm when they're kind of knocked on their heels a little bit, getting back on their toes and going from there.
Yeah. I think one last note for me in this game was that I think it was interesting how Ole Miss never really had a ground game in this one, but exclusively in the red zone, they were able to like punch things in. It was very strange.
Right. And a lot of times that's what you need for your run game, just to be able to get it going when you're right there and you need to be able to convert in the red zone. Because a lot of times with run games, it's not always about being able to get a huge gain or being able to go for like 30, 25, 27-plus yard gains all the time. Sometimes it's just about converting when it matters, and they did.
The longest running play in this game was Quinshon Judkins going for 18 yards for either team.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Judkins managed to have 102 yards on the ground. And three touchdowns, but he only averaged 4.4 yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss as a team averaged 4 yards a carry in this game, but they had three touchdowns on the ground.
Right, yeah.
I don't know, it's just weird. That's like, that was just the way they managed to do it to finish things off. It was like they could run the ball exclusively in the red zone.
Yep, sometimes it's all you need.
But, yeah, I don't know. Anything else from you?
No, that's about it.
Cool, man. Thanks again for joining me. I always do appreciate it.
Of course, thanks for having me.
Yeah, once again, you can follow me on Twitter at bferrell727. You can follow James at JS Murphy Media. And if you want more of our Ole Miss or Mississippi State coverage, check out our lineup of newsletters at djournal.com/newsletters. And if you want to join the conversation with other fans, check out our Mississippi State Sports Discussion or Ole Miss Sports Discussion groups on Facebook. Once again, James, thanks for joining me. Everyone, thank you for listening and have a good one.